Hi, everybody. This is Armand DeMille with you with the Positive Mind here on WBAI 99.5 FM on your dial. Bringing you ideas, concepts, guests, help you lead a more positively minded life. The Positive Mind is back with you. Having had a hiatus for this fundraising, we had some great turnout. I want to thank you people for your donations, which just showed a large response. And I have called almost everyone, as I promised to. If you have not received my call, please call my office, and I will get back to you with my promised 10-minute call for each of you, because it's been great talking to you. But today I want to talk about something else. I want to talk about when people don't keep their promises. I want to talk about what happens when people in some way break an assumed promise. I'm talking about betrayal. Almost everything we see is about betrayal in the news. The headlines are about betrayal. A newspaper is about betrayal. It reports to you about, look at how you were betrayed by politicians, how a maid gets betrayed by a politician in a room when she enters with trust. So betrayal and trust seem to go together as a phrase, and I decided to take some deeper look into it, into a thing that is called betrayal trauma, which I'll talk to you about. Now, just for description, betrayal is the breaking or violation of a trust, a confidence, and it produces a moral and psychological conflict within a relationship among individuals or between organizations or between organizations and individuals, you and your government. Someone who betrays another is commonly called a traitor or a betrayer. Or just a bum. You know, he's that rat. Now, betrayal comes in many forms. And as you think about it, of course, the first thing that everybody thinks about is betrayal in sex. Right? Betrayal in sex. They don't have betrayal in love so much, but betrayal in sex. You know, he slept with somebody else and I found out about it. That's the most common one. Why is that such a major trauma in this world, where here in America, it's considered one of the major mistakes that somebody could do? If a politician does that, you know, he's practically kicked out of office. Why do we pick on betrayal in sex? And we don't care as much as betrayal of our government in sending bombs to Afghanistan, supposedly looking for somebody who's sitting in Palestine. Right? And while we take over the poppy fields, we don't consider that betrayal, or we do consider that betrayal, but we take that. But if somebody fools around, that one could rock us right to our bottom of our timbers. So sex is the probably the big betrayer of all, for some strange reason, because all of nature is designed to have no such promise as I will only have you. You know, the animals don't say to each other, I'll have sex with you and I promise I won't go out with the other lions. They don't say it. They kind of, you know, monogamy is just not something that's out there too much in our, in the animal world. But sex seems to be the big one, because sex betrayal means that somebody else can influence my bloodline. See, somebody else, you could have somebody else's baby. Difference between male jealousy and female jealousy is always very interesting. A woman gets jealous because she believes, now this is a big generalization, I could get letters on it, I'll handle them. But females believe that if the male goes off with another female, he's going to find her more appealing and he's going to go off with her. And she's going to have to take care of the babies by herself. Right? And that's pretty traumatic. That's why women get jealous of their men with other women. They're afraid that the man's going to leave them for somebody who's preferential, who preferred. Men, however, get jealous for a different reason. Male jealousy is, I'm afraid that you are going to be with another man, and then you're going to bring back to me your pregnancy, and I'm going to have to bring up babies that aren't mine. That in nature, it's such a profound thing that male lions, for example, when they take over a whole pride, they kill the baby lions right away. There's this thing about men bringing up babies that aren't theirs. Now, that could be figuratively as well as, you know? So betrayal and jealousy seem to be related. I think you're going to turn on me. But now, you know, I'm bored with sexual betrayal. I'm bored with it. I really am. It's everywhere you go. It's every newspaper, right? That's the one. Okay, so how about theft? High class. How about embezzlement? Is embezzlement betrayal? Of course. Right? Hey, I promise I will never embezzle you. You know, he embezzled me. That means I trusted an employee and the employee took off with the goodies. Embezzlement. Right? Forgery. Somebody give a check to somebody. They assume the check is good. Right? In some way, you're benefiting by it. There are other betrayals. A betrayal of love. It's a different story. That's not just about sex. That's a betrayal when you're getting more out of the experience of somebody loving you and you're tantalizing them into loving you. Women do this a lot with men. You know, I'm going to get you to love me, love me, love me, love me, love me. All the while, I'm not really invested in this as much as you are. And then when I get done with you, I'll find some reason to blame you for it. And then I'll go off with somebody else. Or the opposite of that. The man who showers the woman with all this love, and she's love, 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 love. And he's doing it as an exercise in dominance. But when he gets done with her, he just goes off and meditates or goes off with someone else or something like that. But he's just not serious. As serious as it seems. Now, in love, betrayal is very common because somebody wants to paint a beautiful picture. One of the two people, they both don't have to paint it. So if a woman has fallen madly in love with a man, or a man with a man, or a woman with a woman, but if you've fallen madly in love and you're the lovee, you know, the other person may just go along with it because it's such a pretty picture. Oh, she loved me so much, I'll love her back. But, you know, I don't have the same investment. That's the kind of thing. Now, is there a betrayal there? Letting a person have their own fantasy. You know, she's got the white picket fence that she's got in her fantasy, and she's got this house and all this other stuff. Is it a betrayal to allow somebody to lie to themselves? Well, how much responsibility do you have? Of course, there's a question in there according to your own ethics. Because the only person you may be betraying in that incidents, is yourself. Because you're going along with something that's fraudulent to you, that you're not being true to yourself. But let's go even further. This gets really, really interesting. This is phenomenal. I mean, this is one of those programs you send to somebody, you know? Now, betrayal with addictions is a fascinating thing. Yet you love somebody who's an addict. They could be a sex addict, a porn addict. They could be a gambling addict. They could be an alcohol addict. They could be a drug addict. Now, this is a fascinating thing. Because the chemistry of the addiction produces an entity, this third entity, the thing to which the person is addicted, which has control over the relationship. And it betrays you. I mean, very often you could talk to somebody And you'll say, I know you're using. They say, no, I'm not. I swear I am not. And the one that's talking is the drug itself or the alcohol itself. Denial of truth, you know, can come right from the thing talking to you. So who betrays you? You know, the person in the middle who's the addict is often the victim just as well. Friends sometimes turn on you. Friends turn on you, and they could betray you by gossiping about you, by telling stories about you. That's another one that hurts big, the big way, you know? And I imagine that all of you, at one time or another, have suffered an enormous a betrayal, at least one. In the early stages of development, when we are children, when we're infants, we learn that there are certain things that are taking place that are very uncomfortable. And here's what we learn. We learn that if we cry, somebody comes along and removes the discomfort. Right? It's a basic rule of babydom. I cry if something hurts. I got a pin in my diaper. Well, they don't have those anymore, do they? No more pins and diapers, right? All right, gone. I've soiled myself, and I'm sitting in this discomfort. I cry, and somebody comes along and changes it magically. Now, that starts a link in your mind. This is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind, by the way. Tuesdays and most Wednesdays, here on WBAI 99.5 FM and dial in New York. Okay, back to babydom, right? So here you are, a little baby, and you're laying in the crib, and somebody comes along and says to you, you know, you're hurting, you're crying, I'll come and take care of you. But what if they don't take care of you? Now, hey, I'm hurting, and I cry, and I can't trust if somebody's going to come or not. And it comes, the first distrust happens right there. Is it betrayal? No, but it is distrust. And it is distrust which lays the groundwork, does what is real and what is not real for babies. This happens all the way back then. The more responsive a parent is to their child, the more a person tends to be trustworthy, trustful, you know? But mostly people don't trust. People like to make believe they trust, but they don't. But we have selective trusting. Let's say, and this is where comes what they call relationship betrayal trauma. Betrayal trauma is a fascinating subject. And it was kind of brought up by a woman named Jennifer Freed, F-R-E-Y-D. I wonder, because that was her last name, that she had to become a psychologist, you know? Because she could have been Freud, but, you know, it was Freed, F-R-E-Y-D. Maybe it's pronounced Freyd. Sounds like loose at the edges. Freed, as if she has wings. Jennifer Freed. She explains why a victim can repress harm by another person because they rely on them. And therefore, something happens to their brain that makes them not perceive the betrayal. There are many jokes around men saying, you know, if you get caught in the sack with somebody else, deny it, deny it, deny it. Because even if the woman is visually looking at you, your partner is looking at you doing it, you deny it. Because they want to believe that it's not true. Because the pain of the truth is so big, it could become disorganizing to the mind. And in fact, what Jennifer Freed figured out, Freed is another way of saying, what she found out was that the more important the relationship is to you, the more it builds the very construction of your being, the more you will tend to not see the reality of a betrayal. And because you don't do it now, this is what's really fascinating, you have to change the chemistry of your body. And they have found that there are psychological, biopsychological harm that happens to your holistic well-being as a result of not seeing the betrayal. So very often you would see your girlfriends or somebody who would say, and you know that their guy is cheating on them. And they're kind of walking around as if it's not happening. But it's kind of obvious. He never comes home at night. He's away every Saturday night. You know what I mean? He's any number of things. But because they have a betrayal trauma, and this trauma is so big that it readjusts all of your chemistry. You see different, you smell different, you perceive different. You are not stupid. You're just caught. It's very much like post-traumatic stress disorder that soldiers go through. You get hit with a reality you don't want to get hit with. And this reality just kind of shocks you. It just shocks you. And your mind goes into kind of a funny dissociative overload. Now, what does dissociation mean? Dissociation means when your mind leaves your body. You dissociate. People who are very often being beaten or tortured, they dissociate. They leave their bodies with their minds. Well, very often, betrayal can affect that in a person, and they kind of leave, and they dissociate. And you'll see them, they could be walking around the house singing, you know? And they're just, they're like blissful almost, in denial of what they see. Now, unfortunately, this crazy reaction usually happens to incidents of infidelity. And I'm sorry, friends, they just make too much out of infidelity. Wouldn't it be bad enough that you found out that he was stealing money from your mother? You know, would that be as bad? No, the fact that he had another girlfriend, that's more important. But there are betrayals that are huge to family, to friendship, to trust in so many ways. A guy named Paul Hensley, betrayal trauma is far more injurious than physical and other traumas in that it destabilizes the mental model and psychological contracts the victim has established to see, understand, and respond to life events. It shakes you up very badly. It violates the victim's understanding of the rules, of the roles, of relationships, of respect, of morals, of ethics, and values. The core tenets of our psychological well-being get shaken. And returning to equilibrium requires that we have to redefine these tenets. What is true? What is not true? So when we talk about relationship trauma, we're talking about a person who is not willing to see, not, we take that back because it has nothing to do with will. Somebody who does not see the betrayal and interprets the betrayal in some unusual way so that they don't have to go through the pain of it. Just for you to know, trauma in general, that's a big word. A trauma is an insult to the body. It may be physical, psychological, sociological, or emotional. It disrupts a person's whole system, the biopsychosocial self. And left unattended, the disruption might result in extreme, sometimes lifelong distress. Psychological trauma results from an event or events so egregious, that they offend the mental model by which a person views, understands, and responds to their lives. That I just read you from his definition. So betrayal is a violation of an expressed and perceived trust by a person or person with whom a person relies upon for some aspect of their life. Now, it's different, you know, from it's different from PTSD. Post-traumatic stress disorder has a trauma at the end of it, but that trauma is usually based on fear. Whereas relationship trauma or this trauma, betrayal trauma, usually results in an experience of rage being converted. So it's rage rather than fear. Post-traumatic stress, it's how scared you got when you were out there in the army and you come back and you're just kind of shattered, frightened. Whereas betrayal trauma results in you're feeling angry and not knowing what to do with the anger and not being good at expressing anger. Armand DeMille here with you with a positive mind. Hugh Prather, great poet, once wrote, "I sometimes react to making a mistake as if I had betrayed myself." Do you ever think if you make a mistake, I betrayed myself? "My fear of making a mistake seems to be based on the hidden assumption that I am potentially perfect and that if I could just be very careful, I will not fall from heaven. But a mistake is a declaration of the way that I am, a jolt to the way I intended, a reminder I am not dealing with the facts. When I've listened to my mistakes, then I have grown." You, Prather. But the rest of us, we want to believe we're perfect. So this relationship trauma many of you have gone through, and probably when we get back from our break today, I want to take your calls. Yes, I do want to take your calls about betrayal. But you have to do this thing about betrayal. You know, I mean, here's an interesting thing. You get betrayed, and your mother blames you. Well, you should have known. Well, so that's a funny thing that you always have to deal with. So the betrayee has to deal with shame as well. Not only are you dealing with rage, but with shame. Yes, there is some truth to that. You should have known, but you didn't know. Or if you knew, you decided to ignore it. Okay, that's your way of loving. Yes, you paid your dues. Now, sometimes you pay your dues and you just tell the other person, go away, get lost. Other times they stick around and they go see therapists like me to try to work out the problem. And it's a funny thing when you find out people who come to me for therapy for relationship trauma, I find that the incident is so small compared to the fact that this couple never could talk to each other about anything. That truth wasn't allowed. It was punished. So that what you have to do is when you dig, you're not only recovering. Everybody wants that person for, you know, they want the betrayer to do an act of contrition. You know, they're now going to, I'm sorry, I did this, I was wrong. And you have to beat them up and beat them up. Remember, you did that to me. Yes, until that time you did that. Somehow you got to get past that. Now, sometimes a betrayal touches such a chord in you that you can't let it go. If you're hiding some part of your well-being or some part of your crack, you know, the crack in your well-being, if you're hiding that behind the belief that you have a love that's just, you know, unshakable, and then suddenly the person betrays you, you can't forgive them, because if you forgive them, then it suddenly opens the door to all these other lies that you were told in childhood by your parents. So people who don't recover from betrayal usually are protecting some illusion about their parents' trustworthiness. If I accept that you lied to me, and I accept it, then I have to accept that my parents lied to me as well. And there's, boy, there's, we tend to protect those beliefs. But, you know, your parents never tell you the truth. Parents don't do it. They, why should they? You know, truth is too hard for you to handle. You're too young. I don't want you to know this yet. You know, truth is very rare from parent to child. And if they do tell you the truth, it's going to be, they've got to weigh it against what the value of it is and how it's going to affect you. Of course, we know about political betrayal. Political betrayal is just common. That's what betrayal is. Now, the next question becomes, who does the most betraying? And it's a funny thing about betrayal. Erica Jong once said, betrayal does that. It betrays the betrayer. The person who does the betrayal is actually being betrayed as well by themselves. But there are certain people who tend more to be sensitive to betraying. And those are the dominant personality. A dominant personality is a very interesting thing, because a person who is dominant, who is strong, who is a controlling dominant person, they are very, very, very sensitive to betrayal. Because on some level, they believe that they're controlling everything and they're keeping everything just under their thumb. But they have a feeling that everybody wants to escape. So they're always holding them in place and holding them in place and holding them in place. And you get them a cell phone so you know you can call them all the time, and you track where they are. Because you know you are suspicious of them because you're afraid that you can't control them. The most controlling, jealous people are trying to control their partners because they just don't want to let them go. Jealousy is like, it's all about control. So a dominant person tends to try to control his environment, his or her environment, and there are many women and men who do this. And they have this attempt at controlling the environment and making sure that nobody can hurt them in this way, but they are very fragile. A person who is a dominant personality is a very fragile being, because they're keeping everything under control, and it's like they just, you know, it's like a house of cards. It falls apart very often with the weak ones. There are some good dominant personalities out there who are doing major things. They're major leaders, great people. You know, they've taken that, and they're just in control. They know what to do. But then there are other ones who are just frantic and crazy, and they get so frantic and crazy, they don't know how to live their life without controlling another human being. And we're going to have to talk more about that. This is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind. We're going to take a break. And when we come back from the break, we'll also take some of your calls. And I want to talk to you about the controlling personality, the one, the dominant personality. I want you to learn about that and how that relates to betrayal. Because if anything, that's the person who is most susceptible and finds betrayal most painful. Now the question is, what should we play for you today? Because I think I have just a perfect thing. You see, if you love somebody, you think a betrayal would be the end of the road, don't you? Nah. It's just a glitch along the road. You learn it. You get over it. You work one step further. When it's more than a glitch, then, my friends, you are ready to get out anyway. Right? But we'll be able to recover from that. We'll learn more about that when we get back from our break. Armand DeMille here with you with The Positive Mind here in WBAI. We're with you on Tuesdays and Wednesdays. If you haven't yet fulfilled your pledge, if you made a pledge to donate money, by now everybody should have gotten the offering that we had, because we sent out all our CDs ourselves. The ones from the DeMille, from me. The rest of BAI, it'll take you a while to get them, but ours are already gone and should be in your hands by now. If you haven't gotten them and you paid for them, you know, and you sent in your donation to the station, do give us a call at 212-757-4488. But for today's call, it's going to be 212-209-2900. 212-209-2900. We'll be right back.
Hit the road, Jack, and don't come back no more.
No more, no more, no more.
Hit the road, Jack, and don't come back no more.
Now what'd you say?
Hit the road, Jack, and don't come back no more.
No more, no more, no more.
Hit the road, Jack, and don't come back no more.
Oh, woman, oh, woman, you sure is mean. You the meanest old woman that I ever seen. But I guess if you said so, bop, bop, I better pack my things and go.
That's right.
Hit the road, Jack, and don't come back no more.
Come on, no more, no more.
Hit the road, Jack, and don't come back no more.
And now, baby, listen, baby, don't you treat me this way, 'cause I'll be back on my feet someday.
Don't care if you do, 'cause it's understood, when you got no money, you just ain't no good.
Well, I guess if you say so, bop-bop, I better pack my things and go. Now, that's right.
Hit the road, Jack, and don't come back no more.
No more, no more, no more.
Hit the road, Jack, and don't come back no more. Don't come back no more. Don't come back no more.
Hey, that's Percy Mayfield. Percy Mayfield, hit the road, Jack. Sometimes we wish that we could just tell something. You know, that's enough. That's enough.
Hit the road, Jack. Hit the road, Jack. What you say? Hit the road, Jack. Hit the road, Jack.
White on guitar.
And don't you come back no more.
How many times have you wished you could say that in your life, huh? Don't come back no more. Hit the road, Jack. Hey, this is Armand DeMille back with you with the positive mind. Excited to be with you again, my friends. Nice talking to all of you on the phone. That was really, I appreciated that. We're talking about the dominant personality, and we will be taking your calls at 212-209-2900. The phones are open, and it's time for you to call. I haven't spoken to you in on air for a month, you know? So here we are. We're back. And thank you. We raised our fund money. We got that money in there for the station. That's great. There are people who are taking charge kind of people. And the people of this personality are essentially unwilling to be controlled. That's the main thing they've got going for them, either by others or by circumstances. They fully intend to be masters of their fate. They're strong-willed, decisive, practical, tough-minded, and energetic. They also tend to be domineering. They're unwilling to be controlled by others, frequently manifest in the need to control others instead. At their best, they keep that tendency under check. But it's always there, nevertheless. They have powerful instincts and strong physical appetites, which a dominant person tends to indulge without feelings of shame or guilt. But they have an Achilles heel, and the Achilles heel has to do with betrayal. You know, they're always on the lookout for it. They're sharp, they're suspicious, and they catch it when it happens, and when it happens, it could crumble them. So we're going to be talking more about this today and in future programs, but since we haven't spoken with you for quite a while, we'd like to take one of your calls. This is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind. 212-209-2900. Let's take one of your calls. Hi, you're on the air. This is Armand DeMille. Hello there. I know we got somebody there. It's just a little bit of the beginning of our getting back on the lines. 212-209-2900. Well, okay. Not so easy this time. Be right back with you, my friends. Thank you. 212-209-2900. Let's take another call. This is Armand DeMille. Hi, you're on the air. Hello.
Hi,
there. Yes.
How are you?
Good, good, good. Nice to hear your voice.
Thank you. I just tuned in. I heard a little bit that reminded me of myself, so I figured I'd call up.
And which part? The part about the dominant personality?
I think so.
Yeah. Yeah. How does that feel to you to always be in control?
Well, I can't say that I'm always in control, but I definitely do make an effort to be.
You try to be. What would happen if you weren't? You just let it all go.
I think that part of my controlling, sort of domineering personality comes as a result of the responsibility that I was left with at a young age.
Uh-huh.
My father passed away when I was 19, and our family business was a restaurant. So I was left in the situation of running the restaurant and also supporting a couple of families from that. So I think a lot of it came from that.
Sure. You know, in a funny way, dominance in that situation comes from fear. Because, you know, who's gonna run the shop? Who's going to be there? So your mom turns to you and says, it's up to you. Were you the oldest boy?
Yes.
Yeah, that's it. It's an oldest boy's syndrome, oldest child syndrome.
Yeah, exactly.
And it's a pity because, you know, it's like it kind of robs you of your childhood.
You know, I look at it that way sometimes, but at the same time, I also see it as sort of my father with a little bit of a foreknowledge of the direction that I wasn't headed in, and him saying to me, well, look, you want to start doing things, you want to start getting places, you know, it's an opportunity for you, it's an opportunity to succeed, or it's an opportunity to fail. So I kind of look at it that way as well.
Are you tired? Do you feel tired?
I have also 4 young children and one coming.
Wow.
So, all under 10. So my wife and I are pretty busy, and the restaurant, thankfully, is so well, so that's keeping me busy as well. So I would say I definitely have spells of tiredness here and there.
What's the name of your restaurant?
Giamano's.
And whereabouts is it?
We're down in central New Jersey, right?
Well, good. Anybody listening in, you got to stop by Giamano's and say hi to a fellow WBAI listener.
Certainly.
You would like that, right?
Of course.
Yeah, good.
Of course.
Okay, it's I hear. I hear you saying to yourself, I hear you giving yourself the story, you saying, all right, I've been this way my whole life, I'm going to be this way in the future, I'm kind of stuck with it, and I'm okay with it. And thank God the restaurant's doing well, because if the restaurant weren't doing well, it would put a stress on the family where I would feel like I've failed everybody. And I understand.
I definitely do. I definitely keep that close by to me because I do feel responsible. You know, they sort of brought me up, and now I feel like I'm at a point where, you know, my grandmother and my mother, they took care of me, and now I guess it's my turn to take care of them. So I'm thankful for the opportunity to be able to do that.
Good. Thank you. What's your name, by the way?
My name is Stefan.
Stefan, thank you for calling in. Thank you. Thank you for sharing your wisdom. 212-209-2900. This is Armand DeMille. Yes, sometimes there should be a word for when people accept a burden bigger than themselves. You know, it's like, and yet they don't feel the pain for it. It's just that's what your life is. 212-209-2900. This is Armand DeMille. Hi, you're on the air.
Hey, Armand, how are you?
I'm good.
Yeah, I was wondering about Barack Obama. Is he one of those people that has a betrayal issue in his life?
Well, if you're a politician, you know, betrayal is such a big issue in your life because it's like become standard. You understand? If you're a politician of any sort, you live in a world of betrayal. That's the world. It's everything around you. It's who is going to not keep a promise, who's going to break a promise. That's what it is. That's what politic means. So I don't think if you're somebody who wants to be exempt from, if you want to be in an honest life, politics is not the place to be. Because politics does not tolerate honesty. So if you're talking about Barack Obama, I don't know about him, but I mean, he and everybody else who is up there has got to deal with the same stuff in themselves and in other people. Because politicians, to get elected, they make promises, and then they don't keep the promises. For one reason or another. But when those promises aren't kept, do you call that a betrayal? Well, I know politicians. I know politicians make promises. I don't bet on politicians based on their promises. That's not true. I actually do.
They make promises they know that they...
Yeah, they make promises they know they're not going to keep from the very beginning. Absolutely. But they make them in such a way that they suck me in. And I therefore vote for them. And then when they turn around and do it, I said, ah, I was had again. But we'll get through it.
We live in a world of Roman senators.
Of Roman fantasies?
Senators.
Roman senators. Yes, I think that's one of a... We haven't had a Jimmy Stewart in Washington for a long time. Thank you for calling in.
All right, take care.
Sure, 212-209-2900. This is Armando Miller. Let's take another call. Hi, you're on the air. Hello there. All right. Hi, you're on the air.
Hold on. Go ahead.
Hi there, you're on the air.
Hey, Armand, I spent a career in the Marines, and I think they sort of built a dominant character in us.
Sure. Dominant and yet submissive, because you have to be dominant, but you got to follow orders.
Correct, but they also want... They create you to push leadership, and you always have to set the example of bravery, courage, commitment, and you have to bring it out of those that are under your charge.
Sure. Now, let me ask you something, because this is one of the...
And I was first born, too.
Oh, so you got that naturally, right? You get that from your parents as well. But let me ask you something about the military. In the military, there is a certain betrayal that I think is unique to people, which is friendly fire, being killed by friendly fire. What does a soldier do when his best friend is killed by friendly fire? But you know what that means? That means an accidental bombing by your own guys. What do you do with your mind? What do you say to yourself? I mean, you just get over it and say, yeah, well, that's kind of what happens in war. What do you do?
Well, we... Basically, we think it's really just an individual that made the error, whoever the commander or whoever was behind that friendly fire that landed on us. We look at the individual that made a stupid, dumb mistake, probably a young officer, versus the Marine Corps or the military itself.
And so you don't blame anybody. You see this, you say, oh, poor schlump, made a mistake.
Or we say, well, who did this, dumbass mistake versus, because you get to run into good and bad in there. So you learn to know that if it was a bad individual and not the branch or the military itself.
So in the military, what role does betrayal play among being in the military? What about, it plays an enormous role, doesn't it?
When a senior officer or someone in the position of leadership betrays our code of honor, you expect them, because we lived on our history. We live on patriotism and our history and our honor and our code to our fellow warriors versus what the civilian world. You know, they on their own personal goals. They on their own... where we feel that we have a higher principle of honor, code, and commitment.
Sure. Now, I understand from being in the military that when a person is in the military, they have a great, great command of trust with each other because it's self-supporting. It's the only way you could do it. Me and my brother, right? It's the only way you could get by. And it's the only thing that makes it work. But you said something interesting about being the firstborn, right? How about the mistakes of your parents? Are they challengeable, or are you not allowed to challenge them? Do you say to yourself, as the older child who's looking at some of the mistakes that your parent made with you and your kids, you and your brothers and sisters, Do you just automatically forgive them? Or do you feel like, you know, hey, this is the wrong thing to do?
Well, I guess it took time for me to reach their level in life. Like, let's say, when I was 15, 16, and 17, when I was absorbing, especially which my mother was first born, so I had a stronger connection than her, than my father, which was last born, and I didn't understand him, so I didn't really get the male dominance from him. I got more of my dominant character from my mother because she was the firstborn in her family. And in the anywhere she was involved in organizations, politics, whether the church, in anything in our lives, she was the dominant figure. And she was also, in my sense, more than my father. My father was more streetwise, but when it came to intellectual matters, that was my mother. She was the book reader. She was the puzzle.
Did she make mistakes?
Yes, she did.
And did it make you angry when she made mistakes?
No.
That's what I'm talking about.
Because when I reached to her age and I found myself in, I see how those mistakes can come. Or just the fact that at that time, she didn't have the knowledge that we have today concerning, like, for example, her health, the way she ate then and the way I eat now. The cigarette smoking, which was a style then, and we know that it's bad now. I just came to the point that she just didn't have the knowledge, and it was just part of the way of life at that time that she just was part of it.
Sounds like you live a very diligent life. You know, it sounds like you kind of get your ducks all lined up and you're kind of doing things according to code. You know, your own code. Is that right?
In a sense.
What doesn't work?
She used to always tell me, always leave space for human error. Because there were things that I used to see that learning through religion or politics that I wouldn't like about
people. Do you leave room for your own error?
Oh, yes, definitely.
So you make mistakes, huh?
I try not to. I try. I know I have a sense of perfectionism, in a sense.
Yeah, I can hear that.
But I know that I definitely am not. But it took me a while. In fact, it took me to come out of the military not to see it.
Yeah. Do you have a relationship now with anybody?
Yes.
You have a loving relationship?
Yes.
Does that ever run into trouble with trust?
At times, when you brought it to my attention, I could see that probably it is there. But sometimes.
Yeah, maybe we're talking about someday. Listen, thank you for calling in. What's your name?
I have Ernest. I have one of those one-time visits with you.
Oh, great. Why don't we get together? Give me a call anytime you want.
Well, see, instead of me going, I was going to give it to a friend.
Okay, you can do that too, but I'd love to meet you, Ernest.
Okay. Well, I'd love to meet you too. You're great.
Thank you. 212-209-2900. How nice. The one-time visits are from a while back when we offered that as a premium, right? That's great. Ernest has held on to it like an insurance, right? Like mental health insurance. I like that. 212-209-2900. Let's take one of your calls. Hi, this is Armand DeMille.
Hi, good afternoon, Armand. This is Joe.
Hello, Joe.
I think you could put my picture next to the word control in the dictionary.
Are you going to tell me exactly where to put it?
you want to hear Jaundice childhood? I never chose any childhood friends. Anytime a friend came into my realm, it was like, do I gain or lose power from this friend?
Wow, you know, that's an amazing thing for you to know.
Because
most people do exactly that, but they don't know they're doing it. So to be conscious of it at age 4 is remarkable.
Yeah, I was that kind of kid. I'm totally self-employed piano teacher. I have to be totally in charge of standards and practices in my life. I can't sit on an airplane without fidgeting because until they close the hatch, I think they're lying to me the whole time. And my wife is just sitting there, you know, asking me, you know, with the crossword puzzle, what's a three-letter word? And I'm just sitting there sweating. Are they ever going to close that hatch on the plane? Are we going to get off the ground? So I am a total control freak. I don't think I have control issues with other people too much. It's really just control over my own standards and practices.
Does your wife think you're cute? Your wife think you're cute? Yeah. Does she think that she looks at you sometimes getting upset about things, and she knows you're so upset and she just loves you for it, or does she get angry at you?
No, you know, there's cultural differences. I mean, I'm old world Southern Italian, grandparents who made $4 a week, put $5 in the bank, and that type of background. And she's from the islands, much more laid back and doesn't have those kind of things. So it's a source of amusement for her, I think.
That's exactly what I mean. She thinks you're cute. You know what
yeah.
I mean? That's what it sounds like. Sounds like, you know, old world, Sicilian world, goes and meets somebody who says, just take it easy, man.
Yes. She doesn't think I'm so cute. She really wishes I would chill out.
Uh-huh. Yeah. But, you know, she married you, and she's with you. And on some level, she loves it about you. And on some level, of course, she wishes you would chill out. But the trouble is, if you both chilled out, you'd probably do nothing. And very often, two people who are contrasting that way will get together so you balance each other out. You give her some power, and she gives you some chill.
Right.
That's pretty nice, power chill.
Right, right. But, you know, I do, you know, the control is, I find myself really unique. I mean, I'm really, really heavy-duty control over standards and practices. I find that I could never work for anybody else or work for any kind of agenda that wasn't my own. It's just, I'm not even functional unless I'm in control of standards and practices in my life.
You know, that sounds like a man who never had a father. That's what it sounds like.
Yeah.
What about your dad?
Oh, what about him?
Yeah.
Well, I think I picked up a lot of my fiscal conservatism from him.
Mm-hmm.
He didn't understand my artistic inclinations when I was younger.
It just sounded like you weren't close to him and you couldn't trust him. And that's what you sound. And when you hear that in somebody, it reflects usually in that
right.
one phrase that a person says, I could never work for anybody. I could never be under anybody's thumb, you know? And I hear it. And that's usually the damage from early childhood with a non-trusting father, which I understand. You know, so my congratulations to you for having come where you've come and for having found the love in your life that you found and for
okay.
keeping things together and asking questions about yourself at the same time.
Right. I enjoy your show tremendously. I think it's just absolutely so entertaining and enjoy your engaging personality, and I'll continue to listen. And thanks for hearing me out today.
Sure. Okay, bye-bye for now. This is Armand DeMille. I'll be back with you next Tuesday. Next Tuesday at 1 p.m., my friends. Bye-bye for now. You can go to thepositivemind.com and send me an email.
You're still talking to me?
I can think of younger days when living for my life.